Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support.
I believe that the historical evidence is hugely against 6 million Jews having been deliberately gassed in gas chambers as a deliberate policy of Adolf Hitler.
That's the voice of Bishop Richard Williamson talking about his controversial ideas regarding the Holocaust. Some are calling him a Holocaust denier. He made news, I believe, during the tenure of Pope John Paul II when he was excommunicated. He's been reinstated, and of course that was also a controversial move by the present pope, and then questions are always being asked. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, February the 11th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. After our conversation with Helen Ann James Hitchcock about this Roman Catholic bishop with controversial ideas about the Holocaust, we'll be talking with Pastor Stephen Parks about confession and forgiveness. Helen Hull Hitchcock is a regular guest, founding director of a Catholic women's organization based in St. Louis called Women for Faith and Family. Helen, welcome back.
Thank you.
And joining us also, Helen's husband, Dr. James Hitchcock, professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back.
Thank you.
Is it fair, Dr. Hitchcock, to call Bishop Williamson a Holocaust denier?
Well, from what I have read and heard, it sounds to me like it is. I suppose he would not deny that any Jews had been killed in concentration camps, but he appears to minimize it. And he says that the historical evidence is all against it. I can't imagine what he means by that, that there have been innumerable painstaking investigations made over the years by professional historians. There may be some disagreement. Was it 6 million, 4 million, whatever? But the fact itself seems to be undeniable. And a lot of that came out at the Nuremberg trials that were held right after World War II.
Helen, can you give us the history of Bishop Williamson and his views on this, especially vis-a-vis the papacy?
Yeah, one of the things that I think was unfortunate about this flap is that there's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, about what was excommunication means and what lifting the excommunication means, and also where this Richard Williamson stands in, you mentioned earlier, a Roman Catholic bishop. He's not really a Roman Catholic bishop in the strict sense, because his part of the reason why he's not is because that movement, called the Society of St. Pius X, separated themselves from the church at the time these four men, including Williamson, were ordained, and that's 20 years ago. So in a sense, it's not quite accurate to call him Roman Catholic, because they reject the authority of the Pope, they reject the Second Vatican Council, etc. The reason why he was excommunicated was not for his incredible views of the Holocaust or other crazy ideas he has, but because he was one of the four people that were illegally, against the Pope, Pope John Paul II's direct orders, were consecrated as bishops for this separate movement. And the reason why the excommunications, which were automatically incurred, the reason why the Pope Benedict lifted the excommunications was in order to start to begin to have conversations with how they could get this separate schismatic movement reunited with the Catholic Church.
So this has very little to do, at least in its ecclesiastical aspects, with his views of the Holocaust or any other views that he holds. It has to do with his willingness and those around him to fit within the authority structure of the Roman Church.
To reject the papacy and to reject the Second Vatican Council. That was the reason why they were excommunicated. And his unfortunate broadcast that got so much publicity happened, it seems more than a coincidence, that the broadcast of his views that we just heard that clip from happened on exactly the day that this decree from the Holy See lifting the excommunications of those four men occurred.
Technically, I guess you could say, well, his views about the Holocaust are irrelevant, but I think inevitably and rightly, people are going to say, well, what kind of a man is this? You know, do you really want somebody like this to be declared to be in good standing? Now, as Helen explained, he's not really in good standing, but he was brought one step closer to being in good standing. And I rather think, too, as Helen implied, that someone, whether it was Williamson himself or someone else, wanted this to get out at precisely that moment. Williamson has been the least willing to be reconciled with Rome of any of those bishops, and there is some suspicion that he might deliberately try to sabotage the process. I'm just speculating here.
Okay, so in other words, the media has played this story as, here's this bishop in the Roman Church, denies the Holocaust. John Paul II says, not on my watch, you're excommunicated. Inexplicably, Benedict XVI says, oh, I'm lifting the excommunication irrespective of the man's views on the Holocaust. And then suddenly everyone's questioning whether or not, you know, these are the views held by the see himself. That doesn't sound like the story you guys are telling at all.
Yeah, it's understandable. And it's having the, shall we say, coincidence of having this wacky idea being broadcast publicly, it was inevitable that this would cause the kind of commotion that it did. Instead of then the popes who did not know about Williamson's views, he was not informed of that for some reason, but it was intended to be a pastoral gesture, a fatherly extending of the hand to these four guys who said that it pained them so deeply to be excommunicated and couldn't they lift the excommunication so they could begin to talk about things about how they might eventually be reunited with the church. Instead of that, it deepened disunity within the church. It caused rupture in her relations with other faiths. The Jewish people were outraged, understandably, and it fueled anti-Catholicism in the media generally. It was just preternaturally.
Well, you know, I don't think, in one sense, I don't think the Holocaust issue is entirely irrelevant, because in the movement of which Bishop Williamson and some of the others are a part, while it's ostensibly centered around religious issues like the nature of the Mass and so on, there is, especially in Europe, a strong political kind of undercurrent. A lot of people who are monarchists, and I would not be too surprised if there's a substantial element in that that we could legitimately call anti-Semitic.
And, one of the priests that were associated with the society, the SSPX as it's called, one of the priests was subsequently, a week or so ago, he was excommunicated by his own people, not by the Catholic Church, because he wasn't part of that, but by the SSPX. They got rid of this priest who said that Jews are people of deicide. So, I mean, there is a problem, and there has been for many years with other political overtones in that SSPX movement, the Lefebvreist movement.
So does it look like to both of you that in this case it's likely that Richard Williamson has sabotaged the process, perhaps an intentional effort to embarrass Pope Benedict XVI on the occasion of his attempt to try and bring some reconciliation here through lifting these excommunications?
I think that is, to some extent, what has happened. Now, he has now been told to shut up by his own superior, and apparently has agreed to do in that, and he's been removed from certain offices which he had. If he accepts that and goes quietly, then I will say, okay, it wasn't a sabotage. But I would not be too surprised to find out that in a due course he will lead a kind of an exodus from that movement, because there will be people who will now see him as a martyr. And it is in the nature of these kinds of movements that they keep splintering. And so I could be very unfair to him, but I would not be too surprised if that happens. For the time being, he's silenced, and he supposedly has accepted that.
Helen, finally for you, with only about 30 seconds, how big of a public relations snafu has this been for Pope Benedict?
Major. He had to respond to it publicly and affirm. He's been one of the people who has been most vigorous in supporting good relations with the Jewish people, and this was a major blow that he had to work quite hard to undo. I think it has been successfully done. He had a conversation last week at the initiation of the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, where they resolved this misunderstanding between them and with other Jewish organizations. But it was major. It was a huge public relations snafu at some level.
Helen Hull Hitchcock is founding director of a Catholic women's organization based in St. Louis called Women for Faith and Family. Helen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Dr. James Hitchcock is professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, thank you for your time.
Enjoyed being here.
I like having them as a tag team. That was pretty nice. When we come back from our break, we're going to be talking confession and forgiveness with Pastor Stephen Parks, pastor of University Hills Lutheran Church in Denver. Does God forgive you because you confess your sins? That's the big question. Is this quid pro quo? Does God forgive because you confess, or perhaps do you confess because he forgives? We'll be right back.
The sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
What kind of physical and mental anguish did Jesus endure in the hours leading up to his death? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is titled He Was Crucified. It's written by medical doctor Gerald Stanley. You can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can purchase He Was Crucified by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Enrich your meditation on Christ's passion with He Was Crucified, 1-800-325-3040.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are Planned Parenthood staffers violating state law?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Pro-life college students have launched a successful campaign to show that Planned Parenthood staffers routinely violate state laws by not reporting alleged incidents of statutory rape. Volunteers from Students for Life of America have videotaped at least three incidents of students posing as young teenagers and telling Planned Parenthood officials that they were impregnated by a man over 21 years of age. In each instance, the abortion staffer violated state law by not reporting the incident. Two staffers were suspended after the video of the incident was released on the internet, and legal action could be pending.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.